I don't think mind is derived from brain tissue, from cells, from neurology in general. I think the brain is a platform for the mind, but it's not the source of the mind, and that's a big difference.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get a million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Dr. Richard here. Today is part two with Dr. Stephen G. Post on Pure Unlimited Love. The first half of our conversation was absolutely incredible. If you missed it, you got to go back and listen to it. We'll link it to in the show notes down below at drrichardschuster.com. But check that out and then come right back here for part two of our conversation. When we started talking about, you know, kids and over-relying, and young people in general over-relying on technology, we indirectly addressed one of the seven paths, the sixth one, may you cherish the gift of nature. But we skipped over number five, which is may you know the one mind. Talk to us about what that means.
So may you know the one mind. You know, Einstein, who internalized a lot of information, would have these moments, which he called Gedanke, these deep reflective moments where he would lose sense of time and place. He was in a total flow state, if you will, and he would have tremendous insights. And then he would come out of that state. So in a sense, he was coming closer to the one mind. I believe that there is such a thing as a one mind. When I was a kid at Reed College, this is one of my deepest experiences in life, and it's in the book. I was in the coffee shop. It was 9 at night, West Coast time, and a guy came bounding through the doors and he said, my name's Andy. I've got a brand new Harley Davidson shovelhead. It's the fastest motorcycle in the world. It can hit 180 miles an hour in a minute. And he said, who wants to go for a ride? And because if I was foolish, I said, I'll do it. And I went out into the little parking lot, jumped on his motorcycle, and noticed it was raining. It doesn't snow, but it was slushy. And he took off. And he did hit 150 or 160 miles an hour in a couple of minutes. Went through every red light, every stop sign. He went south on the Pacific Coast Highway for an hour. And I was screaming. I was frightened to death. And I asked him, please stop. I was crying. And he just looked into the air with this cold rain beating his cheeks red. And he laughed, and then he did this amazing Evel Knievel U-turn, and he did drive me back to Portland, and he let me off exactly where he picked me up. And I staggered across the bridge over a little bit of a ravine to my dormitory, and it was amazing. As soon as I walked into the dormitory, the payphone rang. And now I never picked up the payphone, but I felt pushed by some kind of energy. I didn't see anything, but I felt compelled in a very unusual way to pick up that phone. And I picked it up and I said, hello. And lo and behold, now it's 11 West Coast. It's 2 in the morning in New York. I said, hello. And it was my mother. And she said, Stevie, thank God you're alive. And she said, I just woke up. I had this incredible premonition that you were dead. And I said, Mom, that's so interesting because I thought I was dead. And we talked about this experience. And it turns out that there are whole books written about mothers and their imperiled kids. And they have incredible intuitions. So my mother and I had a conversation about the possibility that there is this one comprehensive universal mind. And it's active in all of us. And I had, by the way, later on in life, gone to the University of Chicago and studied with the Nobel laureate Sir John Eccles, who discovered pretty much everything we know about the interaction between neurons. And he never wanted us to believe that mind comes from matter, any more than you can say that blood can come from a stone. They're just different ontologically, philosophically. Now, I know there are 12 theorists of note who are saying that you can get mind from matter, but more than half of the philosophers of mind disagree with that. And they feel that there's such a difference in terms of the nature of those realities. And the great spiritual traditions say that matter comes from mind. In the beginning of the Upanishads, what is the nature of the Supreme Being, which is the one mind? Pure love, pure creativity, and pure freedom. And we as human beings have a little bit of that within us, some little drop within us.
Carl Jung would call this cosmic consciousness.
He would, exactly. And so I'm a strong believer in that, and I've had my amazing experiences, which I'm not going to go through, you know, and I don't drink. I've stayed straight all through my life, and I don't do psychedelics, although I don't judge people who do. But I feel as though I've been blessed with certain kinds of experiences, not unlike the one that I read about from the poet, who's suddenly feeling invaded by something beyond himself. And a lot, you know, Ramanujan, you know, there's a movie called The Man Who Knew Infinity. He was from southern India. He never studied mathematics. And he would be praying at the foot of his goddess. And he would receive these very complicated algorithms. And he'd write them down on the dirt beside where he was kneeling. And then he'd come back and he'd put them in a notebook. And finally, the greatest mathematician at Cambridge, Hardy, around 1900, saw one of these pages, which was sent to him by an Indian mathematician, and he immediately invited Ramanujan to Cambridge University. And they asked Ramanujan if he could prove any of these things, and Ramanujan didn't like to do that because he knew they were true. If you go to Trinity College Library, which is the college at Cambridge, and I've been there a number of times, in the middle of the library, in a beautiful glass case with wonderful teak fringe, are the two notebooks of Ramanujan. And they are considered to be the foundation of major improvements in our knowledge of physics. And everybody recognizes that. So, you know, where does that come from? You have to ask, where does that really come from? And I think that's the kind of reality of the one mind. I don't think mind is derived from brain tissue, from cells, from neurology in general. I think the brain is a platform for the mind, but it's not the source of the mind. And that's a big difference.
This is going from science to spiritual. I'm loving this conversation. I think another example of this would be Edgar Cayce, who was very well documented by scientists from many, many disciplines, studied him for years. Decades. His premonitions were recorded and transcribed, and some of the things he predicted, like he could talk to somebody who was halfway across the country and diagnose a medical condition that doctors hadn't been able to find and provide the remedy, and there was no way to explain that other than he was tapping into something larger. And I would say, to tie this just to what we were previously talking about, you know, and, you know, whether you're, you know, you don't use psychedelics, whether you do or you don't, it's hard, it's actually impossible to access these higher states of consciousness if you are in a constant state of physiological distress, anxious, angry. So a lot of the mechanisms that we are using today, irrespective of our political ideology, are keeping us from accessing these higher states of consciousness because, you know, we're living in this amygdalic loop that is keeping us in anger and fear and distrust rather than being able to embrace these paths to unlimited love that your book talks about. So I find this really timely. Stephen, I do want to talk about the seventh one because I think this is, well, they're all important, but this one really spoke to me. May you honor the spirit of freedom. Talk to us about that.
Well, Dr. Richard, that is connected with may you know the one mind, and probably connected with may you cherish the gift of nature. May you honor the spirit of freedom. So I follow very closely the Russian philosophers of freedom from the so-called Silver Age between Tsar Nicholas and the Bolsheviks. And they were people who were ultimately thrown out because they were not Marxists, and they started a big community in Paris. So Nikolai Berdyaev, I was reading all of his material in college and then in graduate school. I studied world religions at the University of Chicago with so many great people, Mircea Eliade and others, but also studied psychology with Csikszentmihalyi when he was doing his work on flow. And for him, flow was a condition where you could enter into a consciousness of the one mind. But freedom to me in the West is impoverished, because we mainly talk about it in terms of, for example, a dog wanting to chew through its leash. It's a very materialistic kind of view of it. Whereas the Russians, including Dostoevsky and the brothers Karamazov, with the wonderful image of the fact that people prefer by nature security to freedom. I think that if you view the mind as one with this larger original mind, it is by nature free, loving, and creative. It's a good thing for entrepreneurs, by the way. And so if you understand that, then freedom is a gift of the spirit. Sir John Templeton, this is something very few people know about. When the Templeton funds were at their heyday, he wrote a Christmas note to many of his investors. And it just said simply, "Do you know that your mind is a gift?" Very cryptic. And he left it there because he and I agreed entirely. I mean, I introduced him to Larry Dossey, who wrote the book One Mind, and they got along famously, and Sir John supported several conferences that Larry had on the One Mind, and Larry wrote that great book entitled One Mind. I'm a great fan. I know he's getting on in years now, but just a great hero of mine. And Sir John and Larry Dossey and all these people who understood something about the non-local nature of mind, including Deepak Chopra, non-locality. And so mind is the source of freedom, not some animal instinct. Because honestly speaking, if you feed that dog well, it will not chew through its leash. It will be very happy to get that great dog food. And so I don't want to think about freedom in those kinds of terms. May you honor the spirit of freedom. And I'm a big believer in many of the great philosophers of freedom, William James, Henri Bergson. So many of them take this viewpoint. And it's not bizarre. It's a little unpopular among some of the neuroscientists. But as I like to say, many, many neuroscientists do not think that you can get freedom from matter any more than you can get mind from matter.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. I'm wondering, as I think about the totality of this book and all of the time and the research that you spent to create it, was there anything that really surprised you when you were poring over the decades of research and putting this book together that you didn't expect to find?
Not really, to be truthful. I mean, I think that the most recent material, May You Cherish the Gift of Nature. I found a lot of interesting new material out about that. Nature deficit disorder, many psychiatrists who are using social prescribing, which is to say, you know, encouraging patients to do gardening, encouraging patients to go to the art museums, encouraging patients to help others. That is called social prescribing. It's a movement that exists now in 30 different countries around the world. There's an American Association for Social Prescribing, and nature has a big role in this. So one of my heroes is the great landscape architect Olmsted, who designed Central Park, Frederick Olmsted, for example. Wonderful person. He understood that his own mental health was related to his proximity to the natural world. And by the way, when he put the finishing touches on the design of Central Park in New York, which he designed, he was a resident and a patient with schizoid affective disorder at McLean Hospital in Boston. He designed these beautiful landscapes, the Philadelphia Institution, the Connecticut Asylum, all with sweeping hillsides and beautiful opportunities for people to go out and connect with nature. So I'm very proud of something that your audiences may want to Google, www.hopewell.cc. And that's something that we created in Ohio, somewhat near the Pennsylvania border, a 350-acre farm that a billionaireess named Clara Rankin, who just died last year, she purchased that from the Amish. And now if you go online there, you'll see they have at any point in time, probably 70 or 80 individuals who are there for as long as 6 months. It's all covered, insurance covers, but also private philanthropy covers it. And they take on pro-social responsibilities in nature. So they're out milking the cows. They're out bringing the eggs in from the chicken coops. They're brushing the hair on the horses. They're baling the hay. And they do this with great joy. And then they come back into these very nice settings, these indoor settings, and they discuss, they debrief about the meaning of their activities, which is an important point in what they do. And they'll spend, you know, small groups of six or seven, they'll spend a week talking about forgiveness, a week talking about kindness, a week talking about altruism, a week talking about gratitude, and so forth. And they go through most of the areas of positive psychology now. And by discussing this, they're keeping little notebooks about it. It helps them a lot. And now there are something like 80 other entities around the country that are modeled somewhat closely after hopewell.cc. So I'm happy, you know, that I had a little something. I'm not a central figure in it, but I did give a lot of thought about it and talked with Clara Rankin. And it's all based on the philosophy of Harry Stack Sullivan, the psychiatrist from the University of Chicago, who pretty much, you know, I was taking liberty when I define love as when the well-being and security of another is as real to you as your own, and sometimes more so. I was borrowing that somewhat with some improvisation from Harry Stack Sullivan.
Stephen, I cannot believe how quickly the time has flown by. We obviously entered our own little state of flow here as we were talking to each other. As you know, I love to wrap up every episode by asking my guest a single question, and that is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Well, Dr. Richard, I have spent a good 40 years tending to deeply forgetful people. I call them deeply forgetful because I do not like the word dementia. It's a lot like the word retard. We don't call people retarded anymore. We may speak of them as differently abled and so forth. But deeply forgetful is much more inclusive and much more human, and it doesn't separate them from us. So I wrote a book several years ago for Johns Hopkins that got an award with them called Dignity for Deeply Forgetful People. And I'm a big believer. I still devote whatever time I can to working with deeply forgetful people and their families. I broke into this in Cleveland by volunteering to provide respite care for caregivers. I'm a believer that we need to have identifiable constituencies to which we apply our kindness and our callings. So that would be it. And my favorite quote for you entrepreneurs is from Eleanor Roosevelt. The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. You have to believe in the beauty of your dreams, and things will work out. And by the way, one element on the circle of love is mirth, because our society has gotten so polarized that we have, I'm afraid to say this, we've forgotten how to laugh. Not me. I come into this building and I've typically got some very tasteful, uplifting bit of mirth on the tip of my tongue, and I'll share it with somebody or some group that seems a little despondent, because we need that. This is important in human life, and we've gotten so polarized and so caught up in the stress of mutual hatred instead of mutual aid. It's ridiculous. And it wasn't like that with my parents. My dad was a very British type guy, and my mother was a very Irish Catholic. And they would sit down at the dinner table, and she liked Kennedy and he liked Nixon. And they would discuss it around us kids, but it never got weaponized. No one ever threatened that they were going to break up their marriage because of this. So we need spirituality. And I'm glad you mentioned Edgar Cayce. We need to have spirituality as the core of our lives so that we can keep the political in place. It's not unimportant, but it cannot dominate us to our oblivion, which is what's happening.
So well said, Stephen. The book is called Pure Unlimited Love, Science and the Seven Paths to Inner Peace. It's available everywhere books are sold. But if people want to learn more about you, where can they find you online?
Well, the best thing is a website, unlimitedloveinstitute.org. I'll say that one more time, unlimitedloveinstitute.org. And there's also a Stephen with a PHEN, stephengpost.com, has a lot of the same material.
Perfect. And for those of you at the car in the gym, we got you covered. Everything about Unlimited Love and Dr. Stephen G. Post will be linked in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Stephen, I cannot thank you enough for spending some time with me today. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I know everybody listening to this did as well. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Richard. It's been an honor.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to this conversation. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to start your seven paths today, go give us a follow and a five-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find this show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.